Welcome into Redacted on this Wednesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And who almost didn't make it tonight, she was going to be bowing out because we have a little girl who's sick. But Natalie pulled it together.
So if you hear a bell, she's got one of those like diner up bells, the order up.
Order up?
Like,
no, but she's asleep right now.
Yeah, they hit the bell if they wake up, and I'm going to dash right out of here, even if it's mid-sentence. I'm going to go.
Mid-sentence dashing out, and an angel gets its wings as well. Isn't
that nice? It's like the bell from Better Call Saul. Like, what's his name? Salamanca, who just keeps hitting that bell. Like, no, he can't speak.
I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
When we were kids, my mom gave us a bunco bell where it was like you would ring it in case we were gonna get sick or something. If she would run to the opposite side of the house. Mine is slightly less annoying, but anyway, if you hear that bell, I'm out of here, and
right.
Clayton will take it from there.
All right, well, we've got a very busy show for you on this Wednesday. And by the way, I just want to say thank you to all of you for the month of October. We've now passed, just for the month of October, 40 million people watched Redacted in October.
That's 40 amazing.
40 million. So I just want to say thank you to all of you seeking truth. This is the show where we hold powerful people to account, and we are seeking the truth together. We don't have all the answers, but our goal is not to be fed by the mainstream media and all of the corporate bureaucracy and these government politicians who are all mostly corrupt. So our goal here is to seek the truth, cut through the smoke, and that's what we're doing on this show. So much love to all of you for being a part of our amazing community here. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So with that being said, we've got an amazing show for you lined up tonight. We're going to be looking at some very interesting news as it relates to NATO forces amassing in Ukraine. What the hell is going on? We've got a special guest, Colonel Douglas McGregor, is going to be joining us in just moments on that story. And looking at the very latest on Putin, the mobilization continuing, not falling behind, in fact, ready to go. So are we about to see all-out war between NATO forces and Russian forces?
Plus, new documents confirm that the FBI was in on it. And by in on it, I mean they were in bed with the Canadian government to track and monitor the trucker convoy that happened earlier last winter. We're going to talk about why would the United States FBI want to track Canadian truckers? It's an interesting question, and we're going to tell you all about it. And I'm going to, this is a spoiler alert, we have more questions. There are more questions than answers.
Well, and how involved was the Trudeau government in all of it? There's another major part of the story we're going to look at. We're also going to look at a bombshell story from the United States military and whistleblowers from the United States military coming forward in a major lawsuit and on vaccine-related adverse effects. And what exactly happened to the 80,000 or so members of the military who said, no, we are not going to take your forced vaccine, and we are going to either be grounded, meaning not be able to fly our jets anymore at a time when the U.S. military recruitment numbers are way, way down. So we've got some bombshell information on these adverse effects from these U.S. military whistleblowers. You do not want to miss that.
And former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has been served with papers for his role in spying on Julian Assange, who is still not free. We continue to advocate for his freedom here on this show, but at least we know that people who were responsible for persecuting him will be held to account in some measure. We'll talk about what this lawsuit actually means.
All right, it's time to get uncomfortable, everyone, and that means Redacted starts right now. Welcome into Womb Wednesday. Someone said, yeah, that Womb Wednesday. I like that in the chat. That's today. Yesterday was Testicle Tuesday. Today's Womb Wednesday.
Okay.
Why?
Just to like,
I'm just listening to the audience.
Throw a little feminine.
Yeah, a little femininity.
You know, okay.
We celebrate genders on this show. I know we're sort of getting rid of genders these days.
Woman Wednesday.
Oh, yeah, Woman Wednesday.
Well, but, you know, most politicians these days can't tell you what a woman is.
Right.
That's true.
Even Supreme Court justices can't answer that question. What is a woman?
Right. So I don't know how far that gets us, but thank you for the gesture.
Hey.
I should mention here before, and by the way, up here on the screen, if you become a new rebel, you can join the rebellion. If you become a redacted rebel, you just sign up and subscribe for free right there, or become a rebel VIP, which you can do and become a supporter. Thank you, David James. We really appreciate that. When you do that, your name pops right up here on the big screen. Now, I do want to do a little public service announcement. I had three people email me overnight wanting to know if we have a Telegram channel that will ask people to send them money or join some sort of a, I don't know, whatever. The answer is no. Okay, we have a Telegram channel, but we will never send you messages on YouTube and post WhatsApp, you know, follow our WhatsApp, follow our Telegram channel and message us because we want to you to send us money. That's a scam. Right. Russell Brand has to remind his audience of the same thing. Marquez Brownlee did a whole video on how YouTube needs to be better about these spam comments. So please, if someone writes to you on YouTube in a comment that says, you know, send us a WhatsApp message or send us a Telegram message that is not us, please do not do that. We will never do that. So protect yourselves. Those are scammers trying to use our name. They do it to all of the big channels. This is something that YouTube actively needs to fix.
Yes. Yeah. Also, Clayton and I have Instagram fake accounts that people spoof us and sell you crypto courses. I don't have a crypto course. Don't buy that if you think it's from me, because it's not.
Yeah. So please ignore all of that crap. And by the way, we're no longer streaming on Facebook. We've canceled our Facebook accounts. So Facebook is done and Meta stock is down 70%. I love it. Let's please kill Facebook. Let's end it. Let's put it out of its misery.
I was thinking about this today. Like, what would Facebook do if it really got desperate, considering how far they are willing to reach into your lives, how much data they still retain,
right?
How much they are willing to sort of mess with the psyche of adolescents? What would they do to become more sticky, more adhesive, more like, that's what really scares me. And especially as you study the data for, internet addiction on young children and body image issues. And I'm afraid of the despair of big tech.
Yeah, Mark Zuckerberg getting desperate. So cancel your Facebook accounts, cancel your Instagram accounts. Thank you to Rumble for being a free speech advocate. France tried to get them to censor certain content. And Rumble said, you know what? Instead, we'll just pull out of France altogether until you get your shit together.
In fact, we had a viewer who said, I was getting all settled in to watch your show on Rumble and then pulled it up and realized that I cannot no longer watch it in France. And he said, this is super disappointing. But while they litigate whether or not the French government can ask them to, wasn't our channel that they were rejecting. Mm-hmm. It was other just Russian media outlets,
right,
that they decided they didn't want up on that channel, and Rumble refused.
Yeah.
They wanted so to good
take
for them.
RT and other stuff like that. And so Rumble said, nope, we're not doing that. We're not moving the goalposts for you, France. You can shove a croissant up your ass. All right. So please, we also have a daily newsletter, by the way. We should all, it's totally free. Subscribe. It'll be delivered to your inbox first thing in the morning. If you go to redacted.inc, that's the place to go. Just sign up, put in your email address, and you will receive that welcome email. Welcome to the rebellion. And then just, you have to confirm your email. It might go to your spam folder. It might go to your promotions folder, wherever it goes. Just click there and hit verify. Boom. And then the next morning, tomorrow morning, you will receive the newsletter first thing in the morning. First thing in the morning, all you need to do is go to redacted.inc. Well, let's start with the war in Ukraine. Over the past few hours, Ukraine and NATO forces have unleashed hell on Donetsk People's Republic using American weapons, as confirmed on the ground. American forces are now confirmed, even though something we've been reporting here on the show for many, many months. According to the Washington Post, the Associated Press, and Pentagon officials saying the U.S. troops are monitoring NATO arms deliveries, which is interesting. It seems like things are getting much worse, even though we were hoping for peace talks. But it doesn't seem like we're going to get those anytime soon. For more on this, we'd like to bring in Colonel Douglas McGregor to help us cut through this fog of war. Colonel, you've been spot on in your assessments of what is about to unfold. And it seems over the past 24, 48 hours, things have gotten very bizarre. Can you help us cut through some of the disinformation that's floating around out there? What is the truth at this hour?
Well, admittedly, the fog is pretty thick, so we can all be forgiven for being a little confused from time to time as to what is true and what isn't. We know, for instance, that last night, perhaps as many as 100 missiles were fired by the Russian forces. At least 50 to 60 of them penetrated Ukrainian air defenses and wiped out another substantial portion of the Ukrainian power grid. In fact, today, a spokesman for Zelensky pointed out that unless there are serious attempts made to prepare for the winter and improve the situation in Western Ukraine, they may have to evacuate whole cities where there is no power. The country is literally operating in the dark. So this doesn't bode well for Ukraine. At the same time, almost completely unrelated to this reality of Ukraine's descent into chaos because there is no energy, you have this strange announcement that we are suddenly sending, after 8 months of no accountability, a few hundred soldiers under a brigadier general into Ukraine with the mission of somehow or another tracking all of the equipment that's being sent. Well, we already know that large quantities of the equipment are being sold off to others around the world, including ISIS. What is this really all about? I mean, we've been at this for 8 months. We've spent $65 billion, and now suddenly we're worried about accountability. This is beginning to look a little like an advance party for this very dangerous proposition that a multinational coalition of the willing, a force of perhaps 50, 60, 70, 80,000 Western troops will eventually go into Western Ukraine. This was floated, as you know, a couple of weeks ago by General retired Petraeus.
Right.
And people at the time tended to dismiss it. I said, no, you've got to take this very seriously. He wouldn't say it unless others had urged him to do so. So I think this may have something to do with it. We don't know how many Americans, contractors in uniform and so forth, are already in the country anyway. But if this is what I think it is, there's also another rumor floating around inside the Beltway. It hasn't been officially announced, but I think it may be, that we're actually talking about standing up a Russian government in exile. Now, if you're interested in coming to some sort of arrangements with Moscow,
wow.
First of all, don't put together a multinational force to intervene, because the Russians have already said, if you do this, we'll destroy it effectively. So if we go in there, we're going to be at war with Russia. Perhaps the multinational force is designed to try and drag NATO as an alliance into this war that the Europeans, frankly, would otherwise not want to fight. And the second thing is, if your purpose is not regime change, as stated by President Biden, why would anyone even consider the idea of setting up a Russian government in exile? If any of this is supposed to promote peace, understanding, whatever you want to call it, let alone an agreement with Russia, I'd say none of it works. It's a disaster.
Well, you have President Putin over the past 24 hours as well coming out and saying, look, we had a framework in place in Istanbul, right? That all got thrown in the trash at the moment that the UK and the United States basically threw in and said, no, we're no peace talks. So there's really nothing on the table at this hour. Even though we keep hearing from Moscow that they would like to have discussions and they're open to it, but time is running out. And so I want to dive a little deeper into this advanced party idea, because as you said on our show a few weeks ago, once the ground freezes and once Russia is able to move its tanks and start this massive military operation of 300, 400,000 troops, it's game over. So what is the United States preparing, if or NATO forces an advance party? What exactly would that look like to you?
When we talk about an advance party in the military, any unit before it moves into a quote-unquote assembly area, before it goes to an area where it might fight, it sends a small number of officers and soldiers and non-commissioned officers to examine the area and look for good places to establish positions, good places to set up assembly areas. For instance, I was part of the advance party for the 2nd Armored Cavalry Regiment back in 1990 before we deployed to Saudi Arabia. I went down 2 weeks early with others, and we went into the desert and scouted the area and looked for places where we could set up. Ultimately, we used them. It doesn't take very many people to do that. The other problem with this 200 or 300 man contingent under the one star is, why would they need a one star? In fact, why would they need anybody in uniform at all? Most of the time, inspectors are in civilian clothes because they're designed not to alarm and provoke either the host country or potential opponents. So it's perfectly logical to say that these people are looking for areas where they could set up, where they could establish power, where they can fuel themselves, where they can sustain themselves, live. And I don't know what else you could point to, because the notion that they are going to track in an area the size of Texas all of the equipment, at least 40% of which has been sold off and sent to other countries, is absurd. I don't see it happening.
So some of the reports we're hearing, and you can confirm this on your side as well, is that Kherson specifically, there's a mounting of forces in that area. More evacuation orders have been ordered on the Russian side. Where do you think this advance party might find the most opportune place to set up? And ultimately, then, what's the end game then? Is it the United States and NATO amass tens of thousands of forces in that area and move into the four annexed regions, the Donbass?
No, I don't think so. I think it's more likely that they'll stay west of the Dnieper River. And one of the points that's being made is that these forces, if they go in, will stay out of artillery range. The same thing is true for these inspectors, that they will not go forward where they might come under fire by Russian forces, that is, within artillery range. The problem with the notion of outside of artillery range is it excludes the tactical and theater ballistic missiles and cruise missiles, which the Russians have thousands of, carrying up to 1,000-pound conventional warheads, conventional explosives. These are pinpoint accurate in their destinations. So frankly, from the moment you step over the border from Poland into Ukraine, or over the border from Romania into Ukraine, you could be targeted. And we tend to forget that just as we have space-based and terrestrial intelligence gathering assets, in other words, satellites and unmanned systems, so do the Russians. The notion that you're going to fool anybody, sneak in over the night and set up somewhere in Western Ukraine with impunity, is crazy. If we go into that country, we will come under fire. And frankly, if you're a Russian, you know this is quote unquote multinational, your first instinct is to destroy the U.S. forces who are ultimately leading it, who are the core element of the force, as well as U.S. command and control, which is effectively NATO command and control. NATO has no independent command and control, intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, none of it. It's all dependent upon us. So this is an invitation to direct war with Russia.
It's unbelievable, because as we sit here, we're not hearing anything out of Washington about this. There's really no discussion at all about it. All we keep hearing in Pentagon briefings is these are the new advanced systems that we are sending to Ukraine, vampire anti-drone systems. You've talked about a number of different specialty heavy weapons that you were talking about a few weeks ago. Now we're hearing that those are being ramped up to being moved into Ukraine as well. So we're not hearing anything from Washington about this. And what happens, Colonel, once American soldiers start arriving in coffins at Dover Air Force Base?
Well, it depends on your perspective. I think the assumption is, potentially inside this administration, that if they go into Western Ukraine and our forces do come under fire and American lives are lost, that there will be, quote unquote, a rally round the flag effect inside the United States, and everyone will clamor for war with Russia. You know, it's happened before. I mean, if we go back to Pearl Harbor, I mean, quite frankly, Pearl Harbor was something that everyone knew was inevitable as soon as the oil embargo was imposed on Japan. And the Japanese submitted three peace proposals, the last one in October of 1941, that met all of our demands, and we rejected all of it. So the Navy wanted to move the fleet out of Pearl Harbor, and FDR insisted that it stay there. Now, as a result, the United States, if you look at the polling data, which was overwhelmingly opposed to entrance into war in Europe, was then left with no choice, a fait accompli. But this is not Pearl Harbor. Western Ukraine is not Pearl Harbor. It is not part of the United States. It's not territory that we protect. It is not an extension of NATO. And so if we do this, I think they're making a mistake. I think a lot of people are going to be suspicious and say, well, wait a minute, what are we doing in Western Ukraine anyway? But I suspect they're betting that they might be able to get what they want, which is a direct military confrontation with Russia. We haven't even talked about the nuclear dimension.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that side of this.
Yeah, because my fear has always been that there is no danger of the Russians employing nuclear weapons. They don't need them. This is something nobody understands anymore. We haven't really needed nuclear weapons on any battlefield in any military confrontation for decades, because we all have precision microcircuitry that guides all of these missiles and artillery rounds and everything else to the target. The reason we had nuclear weapons on the battlefield for many, many years for potential use was to ensure that if we launched at a target, it would be destroyed, because we didn't have to hit it per se. We could hit near it, and that would cause so much damage that you'd achieve your aim. That's gone. Neither we nor the Russians really need nuclear weapons. But my concern has always been that if we go into Western Ukraine and we take heavy casualties, and the Russians decide, well, that's the end of it, no more nonsense, and just roll us up. In other words, really roll right into contact with us and roll up to the border with Poland or Romania, that people in Washington will say, well, we have to use a nuclear weapon. Because if we don't, we will be seen as losing. Remember, every time that Stoltenberg has talked, he says, well, NATO cannot lose this war. If this war is lost and Ukraine does not prevail, that will be seen as a loss to NATO. Well, if you're going to take that position, then the nuclear option does loom in the background. Hopefully there are people with common sense in Washington and understand that is not an option, because the use of any nuclear weapon, if we say, well, this is a small nuclear weapon, that's okay to use. It's only 5 kilotons,
right,
which is maybe half the damage of Hiroshima. That's okay to use that. We're insane, because the Russian will look at this and say, oh, they're using nuclear weapons? Launch a first strike. No more nonsense. And suddenly we are staring into the abyss of nuclear winter and catastrophe.
What does a confrontation with Russia look like at this moment, and whether or not NATO forces are involved or not? We hear, I'm curious your assessment now of the 300,000 and these, arguably a few weeks away, maybe a few days away from ground freezing and this mobilization unfolding. And
I think that based upon the weather that I'm hearing from Ukraine, it may be another 2, 3, 4 weeks before it freezes thoroughly. So there may be a space there, and that's what worries me about this multinational force, that they may see this as an opportunity before the Russian offenses begin.
And we're hearing reports of a lot of mercenaries now on the battlefield on the Ukrainian side. Is that indicative of the fact that the Ukrainian army is all but destroyed?
Yeah, their manpower is almost exhausted. What's interesting to me is to hear people in NATO say, well, the Ukrainians have limitless manpower, as though every human being who is a man, and potentially even women, can somehow or another be dragooned into fighting. They've already got problems with desertion. They've got problems with people that refuse to fight. They've had units up and down the line in front of Kherson and all the way up to the Russian border saying, we're not going to attack anymore, because to attack these Russian defenses is suicidal. And indeed, they're correct. It is. So now you turn to mercenaries. We have a lot of Polish troops in Russia or Ukrainian uniform. We have some Romanians apparently now joining this. I think the latest count on ISIS fighters hired by the United States government to fight for Ukraine is about 70, maybe 80 by now. This is something that is beyond our imagination. By the way, when people talk about the Russians, they don't understand something. Every Tsarist Russian army, and in fact the Soviet army, had large numbers of non-Slavs and non-Europeans in it, always. Large portions of historic Russian cavalry consisted of Mongolian, Tartar, Turkic troops. This is nothing new, and the Chechens have fought with the Russians as well as against them on many, many occasions. This is not new either. So it's a little different when you start talking about Ukrainians. This is a very different thing for Ukraine. Ukrainians historically have not imported anybody to fight for them, but of course they've taken serious losses.
When this mobilization happens in a few weeks, what do you anticipate will happen from the Russian side on the mobilization? I mean, I'm asking
you.
Well,
the mobilization is already underway, but I mean, it's close to being over. In other words, the first 300,000 are largely showing up now in the support formations and in some of the combat formations that need to reach 100%, preferably 105 or 110% strength before you go into action. But the mobilization itself in Russia, I'm told, is not really being terminated. It quietly continues. And that's why I've told people that potentially by January, end of January, you could have as many as 1 million Russian troops in the field. Now, numbers do matter. They're not always decisive. But the other point is this business about equipment. The equipment that we're seeing show up right now is better than any of the equipment they've used to this point. In addition to that, they have inexhaustible quantities of equipment and of ammunition. I mean, pause and remember for a second, how many times did the Institute for the Study of War and all the other violently anti-Russian, pro-globalist, pro-neocon organizations tell us, oh, the Russians are running out of ammunition, the Russians are running out of missiles, the Russians can't do this much longer. It's always been wrong. Russia is prepared, and Russia can fight as long as it needs to sustain itself. Europe, on the other hand, is very different. They don't have the fuel, they don't have the power, the electricity. Just look at the diesel issue that you brought up the other day.
Right.
The diesel problem over there is acute, not in Russia, but in Ukraine and in Europe. So you start pushing forces into Western Ukraine. How long can you keep them moving? How do you ensure that they can be supplied and provided with transportation? More important, how do you replace your losses? I mean, the Russians have taken some losses. They're all replaced. But Ukrainian losses that are much higher, over 100,000 dead and perhaps 300,000-400,000 wounded, they've had a lot of trouble replacing them. And they're replacing them with reservists and what we would call National Guardsmen with very little military experience and background. But the Russians can do this. We cannot. So these are very important factors that should be considered. But in the White House, I think it's Fantasy Island. People are developing strategies and ideas in isolation from broader realities. Most important, once again, they're not listening to Putin. They're not listening to the Russians. You can't just go on ignoring what people tell you. They're serious. Take them seriously. And don't assume that because we're Americans and we cross into Ukraine, no one will shoot at us. That's absurd.
I'll get you out of here on this question, which is the midterm elections. Of course, in the United States, happens next week. A lot shifts after these elections. We see major shifts in strategy and policy. We see the firing of people. You know, Donald Rumsfeld, just one example. So what do you think will happen post-midterms with this, with U.S. support for Ukraine?
Well, first of all, I'm one of those people who's very skeptical that we will see profound change after the midterms. I hope you're right, but I haven't seen much to give me faith in these so-called Republicans. I mean, once you get past Chip Roy in the House and past Ron Paul or Rand Paul in the Senate, how many stalwarts do you have out there that will carry the fight forward?
Right.
Lots of things are being promised. We'll see how much is delivered. Now, having said that, the Democrats are clearly worried about losing control of Congress. And this is something that I've been concerned about, that there may be an incentive for the Democrats in their overwrought imaginations to launch this disastrous incursion into Western Ukraine before the elections, on the assumption that once we're in there, even if we do take casualties, and I think we would, and we lose people, the outcome is, well, we're stuck now. So you have to support us. It's the old adage, well, we got into there, even though we realize now it was probably a mistake, we have to fight this thing.
Right. Right. Don't vote for John Kerry, vote for me. George W. Bush, we're the ones that got us into it, so you got to see us out of this mess. That's what I'm worried about, too. And we only have a few days left to find out what's going to happen there. Colonel, we really appreciate you joining us. Your insights are fantastic. And I encourage all of our viewers, we'll link up your articles, your writing is equally as fantastic, and we cite it often here on the show. So thank you for what you're doing, being a clear-headed voice, trying to cut through this fog right now. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Clayton.
And he writes at the American Conservative. So thanks to Colonel McGregor on that great piece. He's got a piece coming out tomorrow that we should all check out as well. So thanks to all of our new rebels who subscribe. And I just want to say all of you watching here and saying, you know, great things about having the Colonel on and the great guests that we're able to have here. you know, that's what we're able to do with independent journalism. Yeah. We don't have an agenda other than the truth. So thank you to all of you who are subscribed to the channel and a part of our great community. We've got a lot more news to get to here on this Wednesday. We're going to be talking about the dictator to the north, that is Justin Trudeau, and what kind of cozy relationship he had with the United States FBI during the trucker convoy.
I don't think that's a past tense. Had.
Oh, okay.
Has.
In bed. Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll tell you more about that.
I'm pretty sure they didn't just say, like, that was fun spying on people. Let's stop it now. Mm-hmm. I don't think that happened. That's just conjecture, but I'm pretty sure it's present tense.
We're also going to look at the military vaccine mandates and how devastating that has been and just what these whistleblowers are coming forward with. So you absolutely want to stick around for that story. It is mind-blowing. We're also going to look at former head of the CIA, Mike Pompeo, was just handed something. We're going to show you this unbelievable video coming up in just a few moments and what this maybe portends for the CIA. What will we learn versus Julian Assange? It's a big story. But first, let's go north of the border. Let's go to Canada and talk about dictator Trudeau. Many Canadian viewers watching right now are very concerned about the future of this country, obviously, as it relates to internet censorship and the internet censorship bill, which we'll get to here in just a moment. But really, this FBI story and how it relates to the trucker convoy is a stunning revelation over the past few hours.
Well, new reports, in fact, do show that the FBI provided assistance to the Canadian government to police the trucker convoy. That is the United States Federal Bureau of Investigation helping its neighbor to the north to track people who were exercising their right to protest. Now, recall that these protests were against vaccine mandates. Sorry, let me scoot in the frame for you. Better?
Yes. She's always half of okay. her face half like, of her face is
I'm like,
always
yeah,
in the shot.
I'm doing it. I'm fine. I'm talking to you just fine. And then so while I'm doing this, Clayton is always going like this.
Yeah, just see that giant monitor so, right like, there
that's
with half of your face in the shot.
Okay.
Okay, you're not in the shot.
Is this better?
Just put your head in the shot.
This is good?
There you go.
All right. Roll that tape Perfect. Again if you don't mind. Okay.
All right. So FBI Trudeau. Tell us about this report.
Okay. Recall that these were protests last winter that were against vaccine mandates for truckers. These are people who barely get by in the first place, people who worked during lockdowns. In fact, we had a viewer who has a trucking company and says so many of his trucks are parked because of the diesel shortage, because right. of surging prices. We know they don't operate on huge profits anyway. These people that worked during lockdowns and they were protesting mandates for them to take a vaccine if they do not want to. Many of them were vaccinated. They just didn't think it was right to mandate them to be vaccinated.
So they were standing up for other people, their comrades.
Many of them were, in fact.
Right.
By some estimates, it was even half that were vaccinated that were standing up for their industry. The government called them extremists. They tracked them.
White supremacists.
They seized their bank accounts. And apparently the U.S. government was in on that action, too, because if you're, you know, the U.S. government, that sounds fun. Canadian news outlet CBC reported this from a report that came from a February 11th discussion between Canadian law enforcement agencies. The report said that there was a, quote, foreign element aiding law enforcement. The meeting was about the threat level to politicians and whether, in fact, some needed extra security. A lot of it is redacted, and because that's the name of our show, I get excited to show you redacted documents.
Wow, there's so much information on this redacted document.
Right, and so it talks
Why do they even bother?
Well,
all you got to do is hold it up to the light.
Right.
I'm interested in what's
Put
there.
Put lemon juice on it.
Hold on, I'm going to try that, see if I can do that.
Okay.
No, it's not working.
That's not going to help you.
No. You need paper. I guess you need paper for
so that. So the first page is about, you know, so-and-so politician and so-and-so politician. Do we need to actually give them extra security? And then there's this, like, maybe these threats. I don't know what this is. I'm guessing it had to do with threat levels. And then it sort of concludes. It says a question was raised regarding the demonstration's threat level, but it suggests that the threat has been significantly mitigated. And it goes on to say, you know, we do think that a lot of this sort of extremist language has been taken off of graffiti. We do think that more of the dangerous rhetoric has been ratcheted down and that the threat level is lower, but that's not at all what Prime Minister Trudeau was saying at the time.
Right.
He, in fact, was calling protesters violent and extreme. And again, that just doesn't seem, according to this document, to be what law enforcement was observing. Although they did say, we didn't think that this would get as big as it did. We thought it would just sort of be a blip and then, wow, you know, this is bigger than we thought. And this is where it mentions U.S. involvement. It says, the service indicated that while there was a foreign element, it primarily stemmed from financial support coming from the United States. Why exactly did the United States have to support the Canadian government to, push back against lawful protesters?
Because they're all part of the World Economic Forum. They're all puppets for the WEF. They're all in the tank for it. It's all just one big organism, you know, the United States, Canada.
Well, that's a logical explanation, but like in a granular level, why would they say that that was worth United States taxpayer dollars? I mean, I get what you're saying. That's an umbrella viewpoint.
Because they don't give a shit about Americans and taxpayer dollars. I mean, look, we just had the story that in, was it Ecuador, the United States State Department is doing drag shows. Or was it Ecuador?
It was in Ecuador.
Yeah. Like, so that taxpayers are paying for the United States State Department to put on drag shows in Ecuador.
Okay, but care? Then what do you get from this if you're the FBI?
You get data and surveillance, and you get control, right? That's what these guys want. They want data, surveillance, right, and control. And when you have that control, you can monitor who's coming across the border, who's been vaccinated, who's a rabble rouser that could potentially come into the United States.
Well, they get data track they may not have otherwise had access to. And we right know how the United States government, the CIA and the FBI likes to sort of drag net data right on their own citizens. And if they're given an opportunity to reach across the border. Now, what they had said around the time was that nearly half of the support for this trucker convoy was coming from U.S. citizens and U.S. dollars. And so how did they know that? Well, they knew that obviously because the FBI was watching it,
right,
was monitoring it, not just the social media and the connections, but also the money. This screen, if we can go back to it, says further, the Ottawa Police Service was in regular contact with CSIS and their intelligence had been embedded into the service's overall intelligence posture. And that redacted piece was being suggested on social media, and they were closely observing that aspect. So while people were sort of rallying themselves on social media, the government was watching, not just that. When it mentions here, CSIS, that is Canada's spy agency, the Canadian Security Intelligence Service. So, you know, the two were sort of working in cahoots. This February 11th meeting came around the same time, again, that it was reported that most of the donations were from outside of Canada and from the United States. And then, oh, guess what? A lot of those American companies that hosted crowdfunding for the trucker convoy, then those things were seized. You better believe that the United States government had something to do
right
with finding out where that money came from. I mean, I guess as Americans, you can just consider yourself lucky that they didn't reach into your bank account and, freeze that money too, if you had anything to do with it. But you also have to think, now, this next screen I'm going to show you said it was from this meeting. It said it was noted at the time of the convoy's arrival that there was no intelligence that suggested the demonstration would turn into the occupation that it would become. So they said there are blind spots here, cumulative blind spots, that they just didn't think it would become this big. And so I don't know what they should have looked more closely. They didn't see this happening, but I have to wonder, given the fact that there were,
did they just think inspired, all these Canadians were compliant and they just would fall in line with it?
I don't know. I can't tell you what anyone thought, but my question is, you know, there were inspired demonstrations in the United States that came up right after this. There were truckers who said, we're going to do the same thing. We're inspired by our Canadian brethren. And those did not get the same level of...
Well, there was no media coverage of it.
Well, of course, I guess we can't say how big it is. Something is based on the media coverage. But was the FBI able to tamp those down based on the data that it collected from the Canadian?
Yeah, I don't know how we would figure that out, right? I mean,
it's just a question.
Because it was pretty big. It rolled through Washington, and there just was no media coverage of it.
Yes.
And now that we know,
they didn't have the same. It didn't have the same duration. There weren't as many blockades put up. It didn't seem to stop down, regular life as it did in Ottawa. And so, is that because there was already intelligence that was gained from surveillance in the United States of the original movement?
It's possible. It's possible. I mean, and, you know, Canada continues on a whole other front, which is around this internet censorship bill. So, you know, the chorus of Canadians, as the Toronto Sun is reporting this weekend, the chorus of Canadians from all walks of life now calling on the Senate in Canada to kibosh the Trudeau government censorship bill. Now there's 40,000 signatures so far. We will link it up in the description of today's show after the show, so you guys can sign it if you are Canadian. You want to kill the bill, which is C-11 in its current form. And basically the legislation is due for the opponents of this say, but I think clearly you understand now there's been enough weighing in on this from legal experts to say that what it does is, they say it's to support content creators, right? That's the whole point. We're going to support content creators and make sure that our cultural sectors work for Canadians and supports the next generation of artists and creators. Of course, that's not at all how this thing is actually unfolding. The Winnipeg Free Press says it's clear that that Trudeau doesn't care about Canadian content creators at all. It invades Canadians' privacy. It lessens the ability to hold government accountable by influencing what they see online, what they can see online. A lot of people writing to us over the past couple of weeks saying they're worried they won't be able to see our show, that they won't have access to the content that they see on a regular basis.
Well, if you look at the meeting notes that we just showed you and how law enforcement was really concerned about these cumulative blind spots, we missed how big this would be, even when we were monitoring social media. You have to think that law enforcement then wants to close those blind spots, wants right. to be able to say, oh, we know exactly how big something's going to be because we're watching it and we have direct access to whatever you are doing on the internet. So we can even give a head count before the event happens.
Red Monkey says, yeah, don't upset the cognitive infrastructure. That's a phrase from last night's show.
Yeah.
Here's what Trudeau said about disinformation. I mean, he's been openly worried that disinformation is going to ruin Canada. Listen.
And that firmness is not just Western democracies like us. That is something that we've heard in our conversations, all three of us, with partners around the world who don't have the same kinds of ties to Ukraine, but are very, very concerned about the violation of the rule of law, the principle that suddenly might be right once again, the principle of territorial integrity, respect for sovereignty, the kind of neocolonialism that Vladimir Putin is trying to impose upon Ukrainians. That's not going to fly. And the strength and the resolve of countries around the world to say, no, this is a moment to stand for democracy, against disinformation, misinformation, propaganda, and to stay true to these values that have led to respect and prosperity around the world, that we continue to need to fight for, including in many different parts of the world, whether it's Afghanistan or elsewhere as well.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can seriously say you stand for democracy and then say that you need to censor speech.
Right.
That's misinformation.
Well, he forgot one of them too.
Which is
misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation.
Malinformation.
And they're calling it disinformation. It's an acronym now, right? Or an initialism. I forget then how it
is. It already?
Yeah, it's already like MIB, DIB. Dim nut.
How do you make a distinction?
We're gonna have to bring back Schoolhouse. We'll have to bring back Schoolhouse Rock so they can do a bit on it so we can all remember it.
Right. There's a bill in Congress. It's a, I don't know what the hell it is, but we don't want to have any disinformation about Afghanistan. Like, I love he puts in the Afghanistan piece. Yeah, because we want to make sure that people don't know what a cluster F that was. So we need to make sure that we don't have any disinformation about what actually unfolded there between you guys. Like
that went exactly as planned.
Right. Well, the only reason I don't know that it didn't go as planned because I didn't have disinformation in my way. So if you guys want to fight this bill in Canada, we'll have a link in the show description about this. Go ahead.
I was going to say dismissal. That's what it should be.
Dismissal. Did you take your Bismol? Your dismissal?
Dismissal.
Your Pepto-Bismol? Your Pepto-Bismol. Hey, we've got more news coming up here on the show. We're going to talk about the military whistleblowers on these vaccine mandates in just a moment. We're also going to look at Mike Pompeo, the former head of the CIA, the guy that was organizing the assassination attempt on Julian Assange. Something just happened to him, and I want to show you this video. It's pretty amazing, plus the corresponding lawsuit that's associated with it. But first, I'm going to tell you about our friends over at Stamps.com. They are sponsoring the show. They are a they're one of our longest sponsors. They support what we do here, independent journalism. So if you're getting ready to kind of mail packages for the holiday season, just when you go to stamps.com, see at the top of the screen, you put in that code redacted, and you're going to save a bunch of money. You're going to get a 4-week free trial plus a bunch of free postage. So if you're going to do it, might as well take advantage of it. These guys are great. No matter how we try to prepare for the holiday season, it just hits you over the head like a baseball bat. Yes. The chaos, it always comes. Even if you try to be ahead of the game, it's always a pain, right? So right now, we have, if you got all that seasonal excitement, you're excited about it, you're worried about the families arriving and all of that stuff. Oh my God, I have to mail a whole bunch of stuff. Well, don't worry about it anymore, because now with Stamps.com, you'll be printing your own postage from your house. You don't have to wait in line. You don't have to do any of that. Stamps.com is your one-stop shop for all of your shipping and your mailing needs. For more than 20 years, Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses. You can get access to the UPS or the United States Postal Service all right there, right from your computer. No lines, no traffic, no hassle. So here's what you need to do. And it works seamlessly with all the shopping carts. So if you've got, if you run your thing on Shopify or any of the major marketplaces, it's all tied into that, eBay, etc. This holiday season, trade late nights for silent nights and get started with Stamps.com today. If you sign up right now with that promo code at the top of the screen there, and as I was telling you, redacted, you're going to get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage, and they're going to send you a free digital scale so you can measure your boxes at home. I'm telling you, it's the greatest thing in the world. You can measure your boxes at home. You don't have to wait for the line at the post office or UPS or any of that stuff. No long-term commitments, no contracts. You can just print the postage, slap it right on there, and you can even schedule a pickup so they come right to the house and take it from you. Just go to stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the page. Enter the code redacted. You get a 4-week trial, free postage, and digital scale at stamps.com/redacted. Our thanks to stamps.com for sponsoring the show today. So much love to all of you for subscribing. I hope you like our new graphics up here on the screen. Grim worked really hard on this. So we got the new Rebel. When you become a new Rebel, your name pops right up here. Plus, if you notice the new lightning strikes over the city of Porto here in Portugal, you'll see the beautiful redacted logo popping up there on the screen. And a lot of you have been asking about our storefront. So our store is almost ready to launch. It's there now. You can go and find it if you like. It's redacted.inc/store. But we're going to do a bigger launch for it once we get to the new hoodies and the mugs and all the other things up there. So check it out at redacted.inc/store. That is coming to a computer near you very, very soon.
All right. Well, several members of the U.S. military are now bravely coming forward as whistleblowers, risking their careers to reveal how the government is covering up adverse effects from the vaccine and the fraud that was perpetrated on the U.S. military being forced to take this. Many of them already have had consequences in their careers for speaking up at all or for refusing the vaccine. Many of them have been demoted or lost opportunities for promotion.
Right.
That kind of thing. So do you want to give some context here?
Yeah, because we got some new data out on this too. New data shows that the coding system that the military uses to track health care of service members is showing a huge increase in things like, miscarriages, myocarditis, cancer, Bell's palsy, female infertility, and many, many other health conditions. The list is long, and this is the military's own coding system that the military uses to track these types of
well, it's
healthcare.
Like your, the way you bill your insurance. If you've ever had, you know, your insurance, you take your kid in for a pediatric appointment and they get a, you know, vaccine or something. They're like, oh, the insurance, they didn't put the right code in. So then you have to make 10 phone calls.
Right.
It's like that. It's like how they code things in order to bill for them. Those codes are being disproportionately used in the time since the vaccine mandate went into place.
Right. And this data, we should be specific about it, comes from the Defense Medical Epidemiology Database. Say that five times fast. From the Department of Defense. This is the government's own data from the U.S. military. And now there's a massive lawsuit. Now, there were a couple of whistleblowers, military whistleblowers, who came forward a number of months ago. And they sat at a Senate panel and they came forward to tell their story at great risk of their career. You know, being grounded permanently or expelled from the military for coming forward and blowing the whistle on what was actually happening inside of the military. One of the lead lawyers on this story is Dale Sarin. He is the head lawyer. He's also a former Marine and gathered up these individuals to bring this lawsuit, saying it's one of the greatest frauds perpetrated on the American people and the U.S. military in years. I want to let him explain what his motivation is for bringing this lawsuit. Listen.
There is no licensed vaccine. And I know it's convenient, and I don't blame anybody in the media, but because they've fallen for the FDA's propaganda campaign. But the day that the FDA licensed Comirnaty, August 23rd of 2021, the same day, it removed it from the market. So if you look at the marketing begin and end date of Comirnaty, you'll find that it cannot be sold in the United States because it was removed from the U.S. market the same day that it was actually licensed. And it would be good if maybe we started asking some hard questions about people at the FDA and the DOD who knew this, because it was, notwithstanding that it was removed from the market on August 23rd, the next day, August 24th, the Secretary of Defense announced that they were going to go forward with this vaccine program only for licensed products, of course, that they didn't have. And yet the program rolled forward. And what the DOD did was, as many of the folks here know, the Undersecretary of Defense for Health Affairs, Terry, a woman named Terry Adaram, published a memo claiming that the unlicensed product, BNT162B2, Pfizer's unlicensed EUA product, could be substituted in, that it was interchangeable with the licensed product. And that's the fraud that's at the heart of our case. And it's at the fraud, it's the fraud that's at the heart of why these products have been forced on an unwilling and unsuspecting public.
Unbelievable. So if you think about they sent a letter, of course, in part of the lawsuit, and this was the letter that was sent to Secretary Lloyd Austin on February 1st, 2022, the Honorable Lloyd Austin, the Defense Secretary. And they said, on January 24th, I held a roundtable, and this was from Senator Ron Johnson's office, renowned doctors and medical experts who shared their perspectives on COVID-19 and overall response to the pandemic. At that roundtable, I heard testimony, and specifically from these whistleblowers. The concern is that these increases in health-related issues may be related to the COVID-19 vaccines that our servicemen and women have been mandated to take. And so the list, I mean, of these, just a couple of these things that they highlight in this letter, hypertension, a 2,181% increase.
Well, we're going to go over some of these numbers in a bit, but what he's saying here is that the vaccine that was administered and the vaccine that was approved are two different things. And I believe that's something that David has been saying repeatedly for at least the last year, right? David, this is what you've been saying. I've heard you say it, is that the one that's being used in Europe is approved, but the one that was being used in the United States was not. This is exactly
correct.
Your point, right?
Right.
Do you have any clarifying points on that, or I'm just giving you a high five for having said this?
Or do we have to be very careful?
Just up top. Okay.
Now, Comirnaty, and this was—it's amazing to me. So they just think, oh, no one will notice. I mean, the one that got approved, then they got literally yanked off the shelves the same afternoon because we can't give this to people. It's illegal. We'll just swap it out for this other one that hasn't been tested. Right.
But it was used in Europe, which is strange.
I know, it's bizarre.
The one that was approved.
So we, as part of this roundtable press conference, as it relates to this lawsuit, we're hearing now from a couple of these whistleblowers, a couple of the members of the military that have come together as part of this massive lawsuit. They have over 1,000 members in the military that have now joined this lawsuit. This is no small thing. And they're not only representing themselves, but they're also representing the people who can't speak publicly or don't want to, and whom have these all sorts of adverse effects and issues that they don't want to talk about publicly. Here's John Bowles. He's a fighter pilot. It's a distinguished fighter pilot, and talking about why he came forward. Listen to this.
That's pretty clear, I think, to almost everyone. And in the report that I helped generate to Congress, we've quantified that in terms of actual no kidding vaccine injuries that service members have encountered. Pilots getting pericarditis, one service member having 4 strokes after getting the vaccine, heart attacks, so many things that are just absolutely tragic and horrific stories that are heartbreaking to hear. And I think that's really the kind of common theme here for so many people, is that these service members are kind of heartbroken. I personally am, and I know thousands of others are as well. And we're not doing this because we want to stick it to the man, or because we're a fringe group of rebels, or we're religious radicals or right-wing radicals or anything like that. You know, we were given and instilled in us values about supporting and defending the Constitution, values about integrity and excellence, and values about asking questions when something seems wrong and speaking up about it. And that's exactly what we're doing here today, is we are here to bring awareness to the fact that there are serious concerns about this mandate. They're a detriment to our national security. They're hurting our service members, and the coercive tactics used against them are forcing people out of the military in droves. And so that's my specialty, and that's what I'm here to answer questions on. And hopefully we can start to get the gears moving with the American people in Congress on making some change in this. Because like Rachel said, the lawsuits might be the one thing that actually ends this for us. But the bottom line is, these service members need top cover from the American people and from our congressional leaders. And I'm here to ask for that.
Yeah. So why is this still in place?
Right.
Well, can I point out too, I watched a hearing. Like, a lot of people aren't willing to go down the rabbit holes I do. I watch 7-hour videos. I watched a 7-hour video where a woman from the military, a senior person, was warning of this and talking about all of this. And guess what? Suspended from YouTube, taken down. You know, Rumble's the only place you can still find it. And, you know, these people are marginalized, and all they were trying to do was get the information out that this was happening a year ago.
Silenced. It's an absolute travesty.
And the thing that you seem to be able to hold someone's feet to the fire is around the mandates. Not any, again, we've talked about how the vaccine makers have so much immunity.
Right.
It's not them that's being brought to the litigation table.
Right.
It's just anyone who's issuing a mandate. And as the lawyer in the beginning said, well, what did the DOD know about these mandates and about these adverse effects and about these approval processes when it put the mandates in place? They couldn't have just been winging it. And like this article that went viral from The Atlantic this week was like, let's just give everyone a pass.
Let's give everyone COVID amnesty. Let's give them COVID.
We didn't know any better. If we were mean to people about masks, let's not hold it. Well, there were people who knew better. Those people were deplatformed. So nobody gets a pass for that. Most of us maybe get a pass for for maybe our collective behavior on the internet, like just wear a mask, whatever, because we were being tossed around like marbles. But people who were supposed to be authorities and were actually putting restrictions on people's lives, those people get no passes.
Here is the Atlantic cover piece. If by now you don't know about this story, I mean, it's unbelievable, right? So the Atlantic magazine wrote this piece called "Let's Declare a Pandemic Amnesty. We Need to Forgive One Another for What We Did and Said When We Were in the Dark About COVID." And of course, this has gone viral because so many people are saying, no. The people that did this to my grandmother, and they will share a video of their grandmother, like not even sure where she is, trying to reach through a screen to touch her family. Awful. Like to the people that kept me from seeing my father, who was dying in the hospital and we couldn't go see him. Like, no, screw you. Absolutely screw you. David and Philip, the same with your grandmother. Awful. Right? No, there's no COVID amnesty. And like, what do these people know? When did they know it? And what do they do to cover it up just for profits? right, to control people. And so this one of the questions that came up during this hearing, or one of the questions that came up during this press conference that's part of this lawsuit, is the idea of infertility. Like, what about women? What about women who are in the military? Because we here on Redacted believe there is such a thing as a woman. They are biologically different than a man. Newsflash. And so that might be a concern to some women about infertility. And if we take this experimental thing that maybe is not proven anywhere, like, will we have adverse effects? Like, this hasn't been tested. Can we make sure that this is checked? Here's Olivia. She was one of the people that was a part of this press conference and who came forward. Listen to what she had to say about basically being grounded, blocked, and threatened with her job.
I'd recommend that you go to the FDA website and pull up the community package insert, the information that comes, you know, with the vials of vaccine. It specifically states that fertility was only tested on rats for women. And honestly, it was never even tested on men to determine, you know, whether or not there's a negative impact. Carcinogenicity and genotoxicity were not tested either. So, you know, these are valid concerns that Pfizer points out in their product information to the American people. Since that day, I started looking more and more into the product and realized that the vials that were used to give service members and honestly all of the American people these shots, these vaccines, they're emergency use authorized products. And under Title 21 and Title 10, the government can't legally mandate you to take these products. You always have the right to accept or refuse the products. I raised these concerns to military leadership, you know, specifically stated that the mandates were illegal. And since then, that's resulted in the loss of my assignment to China. The military has taken away training opportunities. They've denied leave. All of my belongings were kept for almost a year. My family had to live out of four bags, you know, the four bags we planned to travel to China with for an entire year. And honestly, I love my country. You know, I joined the military to support and defend the Constitution, to ensure America, you know, the American people remained safe. And it's my job as a naval officer to point out violations of law to military leadership. That's what I've been doing. That's what, you know, nearly 80,000 military members like me have
had to deal with. And that's why they, you know, and who were out of a job.
That
as a
sounds
result
awful.
Of it.
Sounds awful.
Awful. You want to go through some of the data? So this is some of the data. These are some of the specific things that came out in this military data.
Right. So some of the things that they're saying were had an increase in this coding system. For instance, new cancer diagnosis. Now, we were warned that cancer diagnoses would go up because during lockdown, so much cancer was not detected. And so, you know, when you see cancer going up, you think maybe that's because they were undetected cancers, but the numbers just don't support that. So for instance, new cancer diagnosis between 2016 and 2020 in a 4-year bracket was about 38,700 cases. So let's just round to about 40,000 cases in 4 years, so 10,000 cases a year. But since 2021 alone, there has been 114,000 new cases reported. So for, let's say, 2 years of lockdowns not going for cancer screening, we should only have 20,000 extra in a single year, not this huge increase, right? Again, if 40,000 in 4 years is normal, then it should take 11 years to get to 114,000 cases, not just 1 year. That's far more than undiagnosed cancer. So something is going on here. Again, these numbers were presented not only by the lawyers, but by Senator Ron Johnson when he hosted a panel about vaccine injuries in October. And here's a list of all of the pathologies that that we talked about: nervous system disorders, multiple sclerosis, breast cancers, you know, female infertility, pulmonary embolism, migraine, ovarian, testicular cancer. So these are things that we're not saying there's a causation, but we are absolutely saying there's a correlation here that deserves being looked into. And it's terrible that there's no appetite to do it outside of litigation.
So Dale,
could you imagine if that was, take those percentages and put it around gun violence. Imagine if it was that. If you saw an increase that high with gun violence, they'd be all over it. because it's a talking point that they can push. But the fact that, I mean, those percentages, that's crazy. 500-600%.
Maybe. Or if it were happening to Congress, then they would care.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't think they're doing any. Well, who knows? I mean, look at what's going on. Look what's going on in some of our biggest cities across the United States right now. I mean, absolute disaster. So that's why you're going to see this crazy, crazy red wave on Tuesday, perhaps, as Joe Rogan says. He thinks a red wave is coming. Dale Sarin, who is the lawyer on this case, he says, we just want answers. And he really likens this to like Nuremberg. Absolutely. And I don't disagree with him at all. Listen.
Yeah, we're not going to stop until we get the right result, which is this has to end because it's illegal. This is fundamentally what we stretched people's necks for at the Nuremberg War Crimes Tribunal. Same exact charges, in fact. There was an experimental smallpox vaccine during the trial of Dr. Carl Brandt. And that was, that was considered a crime punishable by death back then to force someone to take an experimental medical product or procedure. And we appear to have just abandoned that notion by just slapping the label vaccine on something. So,
yeah, right. So don't ask any questions. And, you know, Jim Cramer was, this is somewhat, it's tangentially related because this is just how in the tank the media is for this and how a part of the intelligence deep state all of these guys are running the show on mainstream media. So Jim Cramer, you know him from CNBC, right? He does that Mad on Money show. And
yes.
And last week he was crying. I don't know if you saw that went viral. He was crying last week because he was really wanting everyone to buy a lot of Meta stocks and Facebook stock. And then that, of course, went belly up and he was crying on the air saying I was wrong about it.
For goodness sakes.
I apologize. I was wrong. It's a
missed
shit.
That one.
So he's back last
well, he's
night.
A, he's a... He's
go ahead.
I was saying he's popular on Reddit for like the Wall Street Bets crowd and all that stuff like that. They as like basically do the opposite of what he says in the stock market.
It's probably smart. Yeah, you would have made a lot of money if you bet against Facebook. Anyway, he last night was saying the reason we need more people. He was basically saying we need more people to go out and get the jabs, and we need propagandists. We need like state-run propagandists to make this happen. Well, I want you to watch the faces of his co-hosts. As he literally says this, watch.
And they got to deal with, what do you do if you told people the way to beat this is no vaccine, right. And now you have a vaccine? So I think what you need is a propagandist.
Outside of the state infrastructure.
Exactly.
To start moving political opinion.
But I think when we think of propaganda, we think about other regimes that we didn't really appreciate.
That guy, they don't even want to hear
no
that.
No part of that conversation.
Like, no.
They're like, what the hell are you talking
about? He laughed. He was
did you really just say that? We need propagandists.
He just tuned him out. I know those guys. I used to work on CNBC, and you could tell Carl Quintanilla was super uncomfortable with that. And he's like, maybe not a state run.
I think he was trying to give it like, maybe we can run that again. I think he was trying to give him give him an out.
Yeah.
Like you don't mean the state run ones. Let's play that again.
And they got to deal with, what do you do if you told people the way to beat this is no vaccine, right. And now you have a vaccine? So I think what you need is a propagandist.
Outside of the state infrastructure.
Exactly.
To start moving political opinion.
But I think when we think of propaganda, we think
look
about
his face is regimes. Even when he said it, he went like this. Even just, I said that, and I don't like the idea of it.
He's like, I'm not even talking. I'm not saying a word.
About those poor people stuck at Disney.
He's like, don't look at me, please.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
you can see, I spend a lot of time thinking about how I would have felt being still at the mainstream media during the pandemic. And if I would have just been like, yeah, everybody, don't ask questions, take the, whatever.
You wouldn't.
If I, because it's a culture of like, people just don't get it. We have to tell them, and even he was like, no to state propaganda, there are people inside of there that are willing to say like, that doesn't feel right. I'm not gonna just along with that.
Like, do you think that they like do they live in ivory towers that they're really that protected from information? Like, they're not going out and watching YouTube videos. They're not actually stepping outside of that
mainstream
universe. So maybe they genuinely feel some of that stuff.
I never did anything like that. No, but I mean, I didn't have
she
political.
Well, mostly, yeah, she covered technology. So she was worked at CNET covering technology and like, you know, and so that she wasn't like knee deep in like politics and that sort of thing.
There wasn't very much, you know, to sort of peek around the curtain at the time. By the time, you know, Edward Snowden came in and really shook things up, I was already pregnant with our son. So I wasn't really, I don't know, like, yeah, I won't go down this rabbit hole today, but you know, I don't think the mainstream media, there's just not enough. It has to start from the core, you know, and then you just take your assignment and you go. So
no, they're all part of it. Yeah. They're part of a culture. They're part of a culture. They're handed sort of marching orders, what they're going to go and cover. You know, and unfortunately, like on our show, when I worked at Fox and I was an anchor at Fox News, like there was much more of like a free thinking, like my boss said to me, just be yourself. Just be yourself. That's all. The only marching orders he ever gave me, just be yourself.
And they never say that to women. It's not. It's like, wear this and cut your hair and wear your makeup differently.
Anyway,
In that world, do they have writers or it's like, because remember in the back in the day, like the journalists actually would do their own reporting. They'd write their own segment. They would, you know, they actually studied the news.
Like
but
Mary
now,
Tyler Moore.
Handed a script and said, hey, this person wrote this. Just read it.
It depends on who.
Yeah, I mean, if you're an actual reporter and you're out in the field and you're actually covering a story and you're have sources and you're working on a story, then you're going to put that together with a producer and so forth. But if you're just like a news presenter, like a news reader type, you know, like I call them news actors. Like that's if they're just like a news actor, like you'll read the scripts that whoever, like a 21-year-old wrote. You know, that's how it goes.
And a lot of it's repurposed. You know, whatever was played in the 3 o'clock or 5 o'clock news is then going to make it into the 7 o'clock news and just repurposed with a different voice and a different anchor.
Wow.
And
they really push the envelope, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. This is why mainstream media is failing. I mean, this is why it's collapsing right before your eyes. I mean, you know, again, CNN absolutely collapsing. They launched their new morning show or whatever this week, I guess. I don't know. And no one's going to watch that crap. The only reason anyone's
Don
even
Lemon
watching
Plus.
CNN is like it's on, you know, it's on at the airport. And so people just glance when they walk by and they see Wolf Blitzer when they're getting a coffee and a scone on their way to a flight. That's the only time you're watching that crap.
Yeah.
So we thank you for supporting independent journalism and just hitting that subscribe button here on our channel because we don't have that agenda.
I've always thought Wolf Blitzer is like watching Captain Kangaroo on Downers.
He has the most monotone voice. I know, it's crazy.
We're going to talk about this story.
Yeah.
On the Situation Room coming up next. We're going to, like, there's no change in his voice at all. Anyway, all right, we've got more news to get to. We're going to cover what happened with Julian Assange and Mike Pompeo, and it's a crazy story, and we're going to get there in a second.
But first, we want to talk to you about our friends at Bank on Yourself. Now, you know that if you invest your money in a 401k or an IRA, that is what our friend Tom Wheelwright likes to call partnering with the government to invest in the stock market. And we are told that that's really the only way to save for your retirement. But that's not true. You absolutely can reach your financial goals and dreams without taking these types of unnecessary risks. When you partner with the government to invest in the stock market, they decide how much you can borrow, when you can pay it back. You owe taxes and penalties when you take it out. And if it's not a Roth, you owe taxes on it when you retire, even though it's your money. And thanks to our skyrocketing national debt and a Congress that continues to spend like drunken sailor, then who knows how much you'll have to pay in taxes during a retirement that could last, what, 30 years? That's why Bank on Yourself is a better way to grow and protect your hard-earned money. This retirement plan alternative has never had a losing year in 160 years. Now, when you think about the economy we're about to come up on, where we're all going to have to live as if we're in wartime without declaration of wartime, apparently. You know, this is worth looking into. You have guaranteed predictable growth and retirement income with no luck, skill, or guesswork required. Your plan doesn't go backwards when the markets tumble, and both your principal and growth are locked in. Plus, you have tax-free retirement income, and you'll know what your tax rate will be in retirement, zero, under current law, which protects you from the upcoming tax tsunami. This is built-in inflation protection, plus you have peace of mind. So get a free report with all the details on how to do this at bankonyourself.com/redacted. Once again, it's bankonyourself.com/redacted. You get a free report with all the details on how the Bank on Yourself strategy adds guarantees, predictability, and control to your financial plan.
Yes. So screw the banks.
<That's> They're screwing you. So
someone in our chat just said, screw the banks. I mean, they want all the control and, unbelievable. All right. Yes. So subscribe to the channel if you would.
Have a drink if you got them.
Have a new rebel here. Polo 2050 just joined. You can become a new rebel and your name will pop right up there. There's the new thunder and lightning. I love it.
It's so nice.
I love it.
Well, it's technically just lightning, but we can say thunder and lightning.
I feel it. I feel it rumble through me. My son goes the other day, he goes, Daddy, did you see the thunder? And I'm like, it's so easy as a kid. I'm like, well, no, I didn't. But I definitely heard it. But I definitely saw the lightning. He's like, yeah, that's what I meant.
When he was a baby, he would go, four, like Thor, anytime he heard
lightning and thunder.
Yeah.
When he heard lightning and he saw thunder.
Awesome. Yeah.
He'd go, Thor is up there.
He would just scream in the
house. All right. I want to show you one of the most really eye-opening pieces of video that I've seen in a long time. And this is just fascinating. I'm going to play this video. And first of all, who you're seeing here is former CIA director Mike Pompeo at a green screen during an event. And I just want you, I'm just going to play it. I'm not going to say anything about it. And then we'll come back and talk about it. It is amazing. Watch.
Sir, P-U-R-S-E-R. And his first name is Benjamin.
Walk up and take a picture with him. So what did he hand him?
That's what you call service.
You've been served, Mr. Pompeo. So he thinks he's there to get his photo taken. Like, come on up, this dinner event. You can have a special dinner and you can have your picture taken with Mike Pompeo.
The guy should have at least taken a picture because, when you prove to the court that you've served someone, there's more than a video. There's like a...
That would have been great, actually. Yeah. Smile. All right. What do you got in your hand here? I just want you to have this after our photo. This is, you've been
can
served.
Can you hold it for
can
the
you hold
photo?
This is it. You've been served. So what's this all about? The lawsuit claims that he provided oversight for a criminal conspiracy to violate the Fourth Amendment rights of American lawyers and journalists inside the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Of course, all around journalists, healthcare providers, and other people going to the Ecuadorian embassy in London to meet with Julian Assange. Now, Pompeo, of course, is one of the biggest defendants in this case, which also names the CIA, current firm UC Global and UC Global director David Morales Gillian. They're accused of spying on WikiLeaks publisher and the founder, Julian Assange, and his visitors while he was seeking refuge inside the Ecuadorian embassy in London. So the lawsuit is amazing because we know that the CIA, under the direction of Mike Pompeo, planned to kidnap and then assassinate Julian Assange. Can you imagine that meeting at the White House? I have an idea. This WikiLeaks guy, we have a meeting. We're going to have, go grab some scones, go grab some seltzer water back there, grab your coffee because we're going to talk about this. So there's a guy named Julian Assange. He just released a whole lot of information about.
I don't think it's that uppity. I think it's just like in the Bourne Identity where it's like,
go get him.
Don't tell me what you're going to do, but do the thing. And they meet in the cafe and it's spoken in innuendo.
There was much more of a paper trail about it. Because Yahoo News broke the story, right?
It'd have to be somewhat uppity. Sorry.
You think?
Yeah, like because meeting it has notes. So many chains of command it has to go through. It's not just one. If it was one person designing it, it has to go through this whole chain of command. So they have to have their meetings. And
that's not how it works on the Bourne Identity, but okay. Sure.
Make it happen. Where's Bourne? Is that Bourne? Is he back?
I mean, and it's like the two guys are trying to not know what the other one's doing, but not really know.
Put an asset in the field. But at the end of the day, I mean, this is, I know we're joking about the Bourne Identity part of this thing, but this is awful. I mean, think about the freedom of the press, right? This is journalism. This is free journalism. we're watching it, you know, collapse before our eyes. And it really, a lot of it hinges on what happens with Julian Assange. So Yahoo News broke the story and the details around how the CIA considered abducting and possibly murdering Assange while he took refuge in the Ecuadorian embassy in London to avoid being extradited on fake, you know, drummed up rape allegations that were then dropped in 2017. Then they had more than 30 former officials say that former CIA director Mike Pompeo was apparently motivated to get even with WikiLeaks. There were 30 people on the record talking to Yahoo News about this following its publication of sensitive CIA data. Now, Deborah Herbeck, the reason that this lawsuit is fascinating is because it's not necessarily about Julian Assange himself, but it's about the people who were going to meet with Julian Assange and what these people were doing to them without their knowledge. So Deborah Herbeck, she's a lawyer that went to visit Assange at the embassy, and you think, oh, attorney-client privilege, right? You go in the, I'm in a safe spot. It's, by the way, it's technically sovereign Ecuador here in London, right? What is the CIA involved in this? How are they involved in the Ecuadorian embassy? So she goes in to meet with Julian Assange, and she explains how, you know, they took our phones. They basically did disk images of our phones. They literally copied SD cards, anything we had, computers. They stole it, basically wiped it and stole the data and handed it back. And they did it while they were hidden, while they were inside meeting with Julian Assange. Listen to Deborah Herbeck, the lawyer who met with Julian Assange.
On arrival, there was a strict protocol for the protection of Julian, we were told. Passports, mobile phones, cameras, laptops, recording devices, and other electronic equipment were turned over to the security guards in the lobby. We learned much later, through a criminal investigation under the supervision of a court in Spain, that while visitors like me were meeting with Julian in the embassy conference room, the guards next door were taking apart our phones, removing and photographing SIM cards, and we believe downloading data from our electronic equipment. Their boss, David Morales from UC Global, who appears to have been recruited by the CIA through associates of Sheldon Adelson during a visit to a tech conference, was making regular trips to Washington, D.C., to New York, to Las Vegas, reportedly to hand over thumb drives and to receive further instructions from his U.S. government handlers. In other words, during our meetings with Julian at the embassy, recordings of our confidential conversations and the contents of our electronic devices were being delivered into the hands of the United States government. I'm a New York lawyer. I have the right to assume that the U.S. government is not listening to my private and privileged conversations with my clients, and that information about other clients and cases I may have on my phone or laptop are secure from illegal government intrusion. This is not just a violation of our constitutional rights. This is an outrage.
That's
unbelievable to think. So, and one of the other lawyers saying, you know, you'd walk in, they'd ask for your phone, and it was supposed to be protected in a security, you know, in a secure spot. No, it wasn't. So while you were in there, they were wiping. They were literally going through and doing mirror images of your phone to get all of the data and information.
That's crazy. I mean, when you go into an embassy, they often do take away your electronic
device. Yeah, but it's put in a secure location.
But you don't assume that they're like, thanks, what's the password?
Right. Or take your computer and literally just do a copy.
Apart.
Yeah.
Like, think about that. They're just taking a phone apart. That's not an easy task these days.
No, and how can you do that, like, in the amount of time that you have? And also the doctor part of that. So the doctor's going, you have patient-client privilege, right? Mm-hmm. So you have the relationship between the doctor. Doesn't matter. They're just getting any information about that client. Doesn't matter. That patient, all of that privacy went out the window.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see how this is handled, of course. We know Mike Pompeo. We know, according to Yahoo News, we know Stella Assange, of course, actively talking about this, what Mike Pompeo was trying to do to assassinate Julian Assange. Mike Pompeo, upon his first speech as CIA director, laid out exactly what he wanted to do with Julian Assange in 2017. Listen.
WikiLeaks walks like a hostile intelligence service and talks like a hostile intelligence service. And has encouraged its followers to find jobs at the CIA in order to obtain intelligence. It directed Chelsea Manning in her theft of specific secret information. It overwhelmingly focuses on the United States, while seeking support from anti-democratic countries and organizations. It's time to call out WikiLeaks for what it really is, a non-state hostile intelligence service often abetted by state actors like Russia.
You know, my question is, now that he has been named as a defendant, along with government agencies, will your taxpayers then provide his defense?
Probably, if it was done under the
he served personally, but he can claim that what he did was on behalf of the job, and so it will be taxpayer-funded lawyers that defend him against this. So then we will collectively defend this behavior.
Well, that means, yeah, it's basically the United States against those people.
Yeah.
Yeah, saying we have the right to do it, and we defend him for having done it. Because, you know, taxpayers will defend, I believe, if I could see the screen again, that the CIA was named as well.
Oh, yeah, the agency was, yeah.
The CIA, the agency, as well as Mike Pompeo personally. So that defense will be thrown under most likely one law firm, one lawyer.
Here's the complaint, Philip, if you want to take it. Yeah, here are the people. Deborah Herbeck, one of the lawyers in this, a couple of lawyers.
No, I'm interested in who are the defendants.
Right here.
Is David, yeah.
Right here, Central Intelligence Agency.
Okay, so you have to think that they will present a collective defense, and that it will be taxpayers who will defend. So, I mean, it's interesting because this lady, who's a New York lawyer, she will pay taxes in order to pay the defense in which she is suing.
Right. This is something I would gladly pay taxes on to get to the bottom of.
No, this you'll be paying taxes to defend what was done. Our taxpayer dollars as Americans will defend the CIA and Mike Pompeo.
So here's a question. Would I rather have my tax dollars go to like the discovery this unfolding? Because this is what's going to happen here. And as someone said, wait till we see the redacted discovery process, right?
Yes.
I'd rather have my tax dollars, frankly, because we know that they flush our tax dollars down the toilet or use it to bomb other countries. I'd much rather have it go to the discovery process to find out what these scumbags were doing with Julian Assange at the CIA. Like, so, you know.
But then our taxes will also pay a settlement for having done it, and it will be an expensive defense.
Or someone, yeah.
It will, and it's all going to be redacted because it's going to fall under the auspice of, oh, we can't share this because it goes against the national security, like somebody in danger, so we can't share any of this information. And plus, they've got the deepest pockets, so none of the, like, those people aren't going to be able to afford to keep this going for years and years where the government could.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, this woman is suing on behalf of herself, like her. So yeah. She can maybe, but it feels awful to know that we collectively are against her, right? Because we're taxpayers, yeah. and so now we will fund the defense for this.
Yeah. Well, let us know your thoughts on this, and we will be following this case to see how much of it is unredacted and what we'll be actually be able to present here on the show. We'll be watching this closely. I can't wait to see how. I'd love to see Pompeo. I hope this is open trial. You know, if it ends up going to trial, I would love to see this. Cameras in there. I'd love to see Pompeo sweating and having to explain and having to account for this assassination piece. I wonder if that'll even come up or if that's admissible as part of this.
But see if he lies, cheats, and steals under oath, right?
Right, which he's proud to say he does.
Maybe they'll do the trial live from Guantanamo.
Live from Guantanamo Bay.
All right. So let's take some of your super chats before we do a few super chats before we get out of here while David's getting those ready. Please sign up for our daily newsletter. It's totally free. It'll be delivered to your inbox on the East Coast time tomorrow, first thing in the morning. If you're on West Coast time or you're in New Zealand or you're in Australia, you'll get it later in the day. We are going to be working on an update on New Zealand tomorrow. I've heard from a number of our New Zealand viewers. So we're going to be covering that story, but it's something we've been looking at. So we will have some details on what's happening in New Zealand tomorrow on the show, and some explosive stories as it relates to the Department of Homeland Security we will be talking about on the show tomorrow as well. So.
All right. Skylar Chase, not sure if you guys covered the Seth Rich story. The FBI wants 66 years to release documents from his laptop they originally denied possession of.
Yeah, 66 years. We didn't cover that on the show today. Did we cover it in the newsletter this morning?
I'm not familiar with the story, no.
Yeah, we didn't. Then it was not in the newsletter.
But thank you for alerting. I'll look into it.
Yes.
Taking a play out of the FDA playbook.
Yeah.
75 years.
66
years. Steve Lilly, thanks for the cup of tea, Clayton. Well done.
You're welcome.
Linda Uzi, keep this up. Love and peace.
Love and peace, right?
Peace
back
to you.
Cooler King 74, greetings from Kentucky. I want to mention to everyone to go to the dentist the next few months. There's a shortage of dental products.
Oh, okay. Huh. My kids have dentist appointments tomorrow, which I told them. I was like, it's kind of cruel to make that right after Halloween. So get in there with a pressure washer.
What? Who was it that had the joke that said they had a really cute dentist, so they eat a package of Oreos when they went before they went to the dentist?
That
wasn't
do
me.
You do that?
No.
For Anna?
No, I don't.
We do have a cute hygienist. And I'm when are you coming home?
Chris Springer said.
I'm here all day. All right, honey, I just got to be here all day. No. Now this side is hurting. I don't know what's going on now. No. Oh, no, it's this side. No, first of all, if there's a cute dental hygienist, when I was growing up there, when I was, hitting puberty, there was a nice looking dental hygienist. She was an older lady. But I always brushed and flossed before I went to see her. I don't want to go there with Oreo mouth.
That would be so embarrassing.
Stephen Wright that did that joke. Wright, I think.
Oh, okay. Good old
Chris
Stephen
Springer,
Wright.
40 million. Congrats.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Jaden, today a Joint Force general said we have only 1 week of ammunition left in America's military.
How do you measure that?
Like this.
I mean, it's probably pretty easy to measure if it's only one box.
Right. Has anybody seen that box of ammunition?
Well, I mean, we were talking about the rate of usage of diesel fuel, but what is our rate of usage of ammunition when we are not at war, according to Congress?
Wink, wink.
Yeah.
Cisco Kid, if I buy a mug, does a tiny Grover come with it?
I can give you a puppy.
If we sold our mugs in a little tiny, our little mini pincher, Grover.
Like Bridesmaids, where the party favor is a puppy. We'd love to give you a puppy.
Man, he went crazy today. I took him for two walks in the morning and then this evening. And he went crazy with these cats today. I mean, he was like, I'm like, you pretend like you didn't see them yesterday and do the same thing yesterday. And then you do the same thing the day before that and you try to get them and you're never going to get them because I've got you on a leash. It's not going to happen.
I wouldn't know what to do if I caught one.
I'm like, I don't know.
It's from the Joker.
Like a dog chasing an ambulance or something.
Yeah.
All right. We got three. I'll do three more.
Okay.
Gerard Winkler, greetings from Austria. Thanks for your content.
Greetings right back.
And Christopher Olson, love you guys. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you so much.
And then Bora Todd, Ecuador. Ha, I was married to the former president's niece. That government is as corrupt as Ukraine and Biden.
Yeah.
We'll end there.
All right.
More about corrupt governments around the world. Well, thank you, everyone, for subscribing to the channel. As I mentioned earlier, if you were late to the show today, we're live every day. Normally at 4 p.m. Eastern time, but because of this daylight saving garbage right now in the United States, it's 5 p.m. just this week. And then next week, it'll be back to normal. 4 p.m. Eastern time is when we do our live show. Please hit the subscribe button and turn on a little bell notification so you're notified when we go live, because tomorrow we've got a very big show for you. This is no joke. We've got some really important guests that are going to be here on the show. One of them with a bombshell story that you haven't heard before, and it's really, really eye-opening. So you're going to want to join us tomorrow on that. So make sure you click on the notification button, and that way you'll be notified. So we will be back here tomorrow, everyone. It'll be 5 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow. Have a great night, everyone. And as Joe Biden says, bye-bye.